Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Shiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Uvirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 11, Chapter entitled The Symptoms of the Living Entities, text number 48. Prayena Bhakti Yogena Satsangena Vinodava Nopayo Vijate Samyak Prayanam Hi Satam Aham Prayena. For all practical purposes. Bhakti Yogena. Devotional service unto me. Satsangena. Which is made possible by association with my devotees. Vina. Without. Udava. O Uddhava, na, not, upaya, any means, vijate, there is, samyak, that actually works, prayanam, the true path of life or actual shelter. Because Satam of liberated souls. Aham. I. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. My dear Uddhava, I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life for saintly liberated persons. And thus, if one does not engage in my loving devotional service, which is made possible by associating with my devotees, then for all practical purposes, one possesses no effective means for escaping from material existence. Translation responsibly. My dear Uddhava, I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life for saintly persons. And thus, if one does not engage in my loving devotional service, which is made possible by associating with my devotees, then for all practical purposes, one possesses no effective means for escaping from material existence. Purport. Lord Krishna has described to Uddhava the characteristics of Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, both of which are considered to be spiritual processes. Now, however, Lord Krishna clearly indicates that Bhakti Yoga is the only real means of to totally free oneself from material existence, and that Bhakti Yoga is not possible without Sat Sangha, or association with other Vaishnavas. On the path of Bhakti Mishra Jnana, or speculation on the absolute truth mixed with devotion, one is still affected by the three modes of material nature. The pure soul, liberated from all material qualities, has no tendency or desire to engage in philosophical speculation, severe austerities, or in personal meditation. The pure soul simply loves Krishna and wants to serve him constantly. Jivera Swarupahoy, Krishnera Nitya Das. Pure devotional service to the Lord is called Kevala Bhakti, whereas devotional service mixed with speculative propensities is called Guna Bhuta Bhakti, or devotional service polluted by the material modes of nature. One who is actually intelligent does not make a show of philosophical wizardry, but rather discerns the superiority of pure love of Godhead and takes to the path of Kevala Bhakti. One who emphasizes so-called intellectual achievements is actually less intelligent, because such a person is more attracted to intelligence than to the pure soul, which is superior. It should be understood, however, that pure devotional service is not non-philosophical or anti-intellectual. The absolute truth is far more extensive than partial truth. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge of Lord Krishna has the greatest facility to engage in philosophical analysis, since a pure devotee is working with the entire range of conceptual categories. Those who do not know Lord Krishna are attracted to the impersonal Brahman or to the localized Paramatma, but they are not aware of the ultimate category of understanding called Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lacking knowledge of Bhagavan, such imperfect philosophers certainly do not understand the expansion, interaction and withdrawal of the Lord's innumerable potencies, and thus cannot fully analyze them. By faithfully accepting everything Lord Krishna speaks as the absolute truth, one comes to the mature platform of philosophy and achieves perfect knowledge. In addition to philosophical or intellectual understanding, pure devotional service also awards all other benefits in life, both material and spiritual. Therefore, one who, for any purpose whatsoever, accepts a process other than devotional service, has unfortunately misunderstood the nature of pure devotional service to Lord Krishna. It is emphasized here that one must cultivate devotional service in the association of other devotees. On the other hand, the jnana yoga process is cultivated alone because it is difficult for even two mental speculators to be in the same place without their association degenerating into constant quarrel. Other processes of self-realization are compared to the nipples on a goat's neck. They look just like breast nipples, but they will not give any milk whatsoever. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted the following verses spoken by Sri Uddhava, Shukadeva Goswami and Narad Muni, respectively. My dear Lord, for one who has been cruelly burned in the blazing fire of material existence, having fallen into the network of material miseries, I do not see any other possible shelter besides your two lotus feet, which are a shower of nectar extinguishing the fire of suffering. Material existence is like an ocean that is extremely difficult to cross. The conditioned souls have fallen into this ocean, which is not cool, but rather burns them with the fire of misery. But for one who has fallen into this sea and desires to get out, there is no other rescue boat except for the constant relishing within oneself of the pastime narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is the use of the yoga system, philosophical speculation, mere renunciation of the world, or Vedic studies? In fact, what is the use of any so-called auspicious process without Lord Krishna, who is the source of our very existence? If, as stated in this verse, it is generally prayena, impossible to escape material bondage without devotional service in the association of devotees, one can simply imagine the probabilities of liberation in Kali Yuga without the Krishna consciousness movement. The chances are certainly zero. One may concoct a type of liberation on the mental platform, or one may live in a so-called spiritual society of mutual flattery, but if one actually wants to go back home, back to Godhead, and see with spiritual eyes the beautiful kingdom of God called Krishna Loka, one must take to Lord Chaitanya's movement and worship Lord Krishna in the association of the Bhakti Gan, the devotees of the Lord. Omagyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Sadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindupi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Rama Rama Hare Hare. Just pass me one of those mats. So as described in the purport, the process of Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are being compared. So in the process of Jnana Yoga, what are some of the practices which the practitioner has to practice? Yama, Niyama, yeah, that's good. What else do they do? What do you do? Pranayama, yeah. What else do you do?
Meditation.
Yeah, control of the senses, all those things. As it describes in the purport, it says that the process involves... Just trying to find it, yeah. Philosophical speculation, severe austerities, and impersonal meditation. Hand up if you enjoy severe austerities. Okay. What about philosophical speculation? Or how about... What was the other one? Impersonal meditation. Means to meditate on nothing. Or to meditate on a light, like that. This is what is being compared. So this is the comparison with Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is a dry process, right? It is like you come to the Sunday feast and the only thing which is served is mashed potato. How enthusiastic will you be? How far will our preaching go? Right? We don't serve anything but just one simple preparation, right? Which is just, I mean, mashed potato is as close as you can get to the Brahma Jyoti in terms of, you know, food. It's just like white, you know, it's, you know, formless. You know, that's kind of like what the Brahma Jyoti is like. Right? Brahma Jyoti is a little more subtle, but, you know, basically it's like that. Right? It's a very dry situation. Right? Imagine if that was all we were able to eat. Right? So that is what it is like following the impersonal path. Following the impersonal path means that one has to engage in a dry process. There's not a lot of rasa. Rupa Goswami describes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he describes that the amount of pleasure that you can get from Brahmananda. Brahmananda means the bliss which you experience from impersonal meditation or the impersonal path. He says that that pleasure which you can derive from Brahmananda or from following the impersonal path, it is like a fragment or a particle from the drop of the ocean of the nectar of devotion. So just like if you go down to the beach and you'll see the ocean, right, and that's unlimited, right, practically, even what we can see there, unlimited amount of water. How many drops are in that amount of water that we can see? What to speak of the entire ocean, right? So you just take one drop, right, and you just get a particle from that drop, and that's the pleasure which is contained in Brahmananda on the impersonal path, compared to the ocean of the nectar of devotion. At this point in time, we are only tasting a drop. We are only getting a drop of nectar on our path, because we're just sadhikas. We haven't gone to the platform of bhava bhakti or prema bhakti. We're just practicing sadhana bhakti. But even our sadhana, that drop of nectar which we are experiencing, we are getting more taste than the topmost impersonalists in this world. You know, the highest gurus in this world. You know, Paramananda Saraswati, Ananda, you know, the different, what are they called? The different Mayavadi sannyasis. Satchananda, Paramananda, Premananda, you know, Saraswati, you know, Babashri Sai, you know, all the different, all the pleasure that they get, even the topmost practitioners, right? The topmost pleasure that they get is insignificant even compared to a beginning devotee on the path of bhakti. Right? Their pleasure does not compare with ours. Right? It is insignificant. Right? And basically what they're doing is it is pretentious, or it is just it's a pretentious path, which means they're pretending. Just like a few years ago they had a video of Sai Baba who was on television, and the camera was there, and because of the angle of the camera was kind of down low, so the camera is kind of like, you know, maybe about here, kind of like looking up. And it showed that he was presenting a statue of one of the devas, I think. He was giving a statue to some politician or something. And you see from underneath the statue, and see it captures on the camera, he pulls out a necklace. And then he goes, part of his magic tricks. So, you know, because he's famous for giving different things like that. So it was actually caught on camera that he was cheating. So it's a pretentious path. There's not actually a taste there. You have to act and pretend just to keep up your image or your profile or whatever it is. You're not actually getting a deep taste. Whereas compared to bhakti yoga, we get unlimited taste. Even on our path of sadhana, we haven't even got to a very advanced level yet, and we're experiencing so much taste in bhakti yoga. So these are the two paths which are being compared. So Krishna says conclusively, this is the supreme authority, which Srila Prabhupada explains again and again and again in his Bhaktivedanta purports, that Krishna is the supreme authority out of all Vedic authorities. Krishna says, Vedanta Krit, Veda Vit, Aham Eva Vejo. Vedanta Krit means I compiled the Vedas. Vedanta Krit, I am the compiler in the form of Vyasadeva. Vedanta Krit, Vedavit. Vedavit means I know the Vedas, I understand them. If you write a book, right, then who knows that book the best? Right? The author knows the book. Right? So who wrote the Vedas? Right, a vast body of literature. Compared to all the other religions and philosophies on the world, their literary works are insignificant. Just like you go into Christianity or Judaism or even Buddhism or Islam, the amount of literature which they have compared to what we have in our tradition is insignificant. We have like an unlimited practically body of literature, right? Puranas, Itihasas, right? Upanishads. Right, the Vedas themselves, right, and then the commentaries, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, and then you have the Gita and the Bhagavatam, which is like the cream or the essence of all the Vedas. So Krishna says, I am the knower, I compiled them. Right? Who is a greater authority than Krishna? Right? No one is a greater authority than the person who actually writes the books or they actually emanate from. Right? So he is the compiler of the Veda. Vedanta Krit, Vedavit, Aham Eva Vejo. What does Aham Eva Vejo mean? Yeah, I am to be known. If you study all the Vedas, what is the goal? What is the essence? What is the sara? Or what is the rahasya of the Vedas? Right? It is to know Krishna. Aham. Just says by me. I. Aham Eva Veda. Aham. What is it? Aham Eva Vejo. Yeah. Aham Eva Vejo, which means I am to be known by the Vedas. Right? So this is the essence of the Vedas. The essence of the Vedanta is to know Krishna. Like that. So, by following that path, then one will get unlimited satisfaction. By following the impersonalist path, the satisfaction is very limited. But by following the path of bhakti, we get practically unlimited bliss. That is because we are directly communing or interrelating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. This is explained within the Vedic literatures. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, and Bhagavan iti, Shabjite. The Vedas are divided into three aspects of the Absolute Truth. Right? One of the aspects is Brahman, one is Paramatma, and one is Bhagavan. But the source of all, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, is Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Right? The Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Right? He is the Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality. So this Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna, by relating with him, we will get unlimited satisfaction, which cannot be experienced by any impersonalist. Because the impersonalist is simply having an impersonal relationship. It is dry, it is boring. Just like if we take one of the light bulbs, right, you can pick any particular light bulb you want, right, in the room. You have many to choose from, right? Now, sit in the temple room for the rest of today. This is your service. Right? Yeah, but this is your service. This is a higher service. So you sit in the temple for the rest of the day and cultivate a relationship with that particular light bulb which you've chosen. Right? And then see how much satisfaction you derive from that relationship. Right? It is limited. Right? So how much satisfaction will you get from relating to the impersonal Brahman, to the Brahma Jyoti? Right? It is impersonal. You can't have rasa. Rasa, or taste, is only experienced between people. That's why we have social interaction. Right? Srila Prabhupada points out that we are social creatures. Right? We need social interaction. We are always hankering after and trying to find social interaction. We always want to be with others. So then why do we want to be with others? So we can churn some rasa. Right? We get with our friends and then we have some rasa. Right? And just like if you live in Bhakti Bhavan, our devotional ashram down the road, which we've taken over. That's the tendency of the Hare Krishna movement. We tend to take over. We're not satisfied until we have the entire earth. And then we'll start moving into the other planets. So, in Bhakti Bhavan, what do they do on Sunday? What is the activity? They go across to the schoolyard and they play cricket. Right? So, what is the purpose of the activity? The purpose of the activity is to churn some rasa. Right? And after every ball, they spend 15 minutes arguing. Right? Whether or not the person was in or out. Like that. So it's all rasa. Right? How much fun will you have if you just go down to the schoolyard by yourself and just practice bowling at the wall all day? Right? You just bowl at the wall. Oh, that was a good one. Get it again, run back and pull again. That was a good one. Then you go back, and this time you run up and you think, oh, Tendulkar's there. Oh. And then again, like this, you know, like that. You know, I'm Dennis Lilly. Like that. So, in your mind, but how much rasa will you get compared to if you get all the boys there, right? And then you're all playing, right? And you're all arguing and having your pleasure, like that. So where's the comparison? There's no comparison. So therefore, Krishna himself is saying here that the path of jnana, this is the author of the Vedas. Right? This is the personality who the Vedas emanates from. He says, Vedanta Krit, I compile them. Right? Vedanta Vit, I know them. I know what the purpose is. And aham eva vejo, it is me who is to be known. Right? He understands the purpose. And then what does he say? He compares jnana to bhakti. And he says, jnana is dry, it is useless. Why do you want to just go out into the Himalayas, sit there by yourself, grow a beard, right? Sit in the ice and meditate? Right? This is explained, this point, it's an important point to understand, and is explained by Haridas Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani. Right? That on the other paths, such as the path of jnana and the path of tapasya and the path of karma and the path of yoga, all the different other paths, the means is a how do you say it? The means is a... I'm just trying to... It is a way to achieve the goal. Like, we have a process to achieve the goal. But on the other paths... Maybe everyone just move forward a little bit because it's getting a bit squashy. Just in case devotees want to... get in there. No. The Haridas Thakur describes it. The means is a way to get to the goal. But he describes that on all the other paths, except for bhakti, when you get to the goal, the actual goal is different to the means. Right? In other words, the way you practice your austerity, for example, you go to the Himalayas, you sit there and you meditate, and you do all this austerity and sense control, or you go underwater, just like we see Sarabi Muni as an example in the Bhagavatam. He went under the water, you know, for I think it was like thousands of years, maybe 10,000 or 60,000 years. So he's underwater and he's meditating like that. But then what is he's practicing a certain process to get to the goal. But the goal is different. The goal is not to sit underwater for eternity. Right? It's not that he will sit in the Himalayas for eternity in the middle of ice. Right? That is not the goal. Right? So the means and the goal are different. Right? They practice a certain means, and then when you get to the goal, then you reject the means. Right? I don't need that anymore. Right? Now I have attained the goal. Right? So it's different. Prabhupada also gives this example in relationship to the guru. For the Mayavadis, they reject the guru. Right? Later on. Right? They use the guru, but then it's an impersonal, right? Because it's an impersonal path. The relationship is impersonal. So you have respect for the guru, but then at a certain point then you reject him. So one time, actually happened on several occasions, one time in Hong Kong and also I think maybe in America. So Prabhupada was walking up a small hill, like he was going on his morning walk, and there was a small hill. So then one of the devotees was helping Prabhupada, right, was holding Prabhupada and helping him to walk up the hill. So when Prabhupada got to the top of the hill, then Prabhupada pushed him away. Right? Right? He said, "I do not need you anymore. You have helped me get this far, now I do not need you, I reject you." And then the devotee was shocked. You know, Prabhupada, you know, just pushed me away like that. And then Prabhupada said, "This is what the Mayavadis are like. Right? They use the guru to get to their goal or their destination, and when they get to the destination, I don't need you anymore." Like that. So that's impersonalism. So that is the difference of the two paths. Right? One is the means to the end, but Haridas Thakur describes that on the path of bhakti, the means and the end are the same. Just like Prabhupada said in 1977, just before he left this world, in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, "The pujaris of Krishna and Balaram are the most fortunate living entities in the universe." Because, just like Rasa Prabhu, right? He is with the Chamara, he is fanning Lord Balaram, Lady Subhadra and Lord Jagannath, right? Right now. So what is that activity? That is a constitutional activity, right? You're performing an activity which when you get to the goal in the spiritual world, you're doing exactly the same activity. Right? So the means and the end are exactly the same on the path of bhakti. Right? In all the other paths, the means is just a means to get to the end, and then you reject the means. On the path of bhakti, whatever we are doing, right, all the services we do directly in relationship to the deities, they are constitutional. You're making garlands for the deities, you'll make garlands in the spiritual world. You're fanning the deities, you'll fan the deities in the spiritual world. You cook for the deities, you'll be cooking for them in the spiritual world. It's exactly the same. Right? The deities are exactly the same. Right? We worship Radha Krishna. So that when we go to Goloka Vrindavan, and we pray one day we will go, then we will worship Radha and Krishna. We worship Gaura Nittai. So that we pray one day we will go and worship Gaura Nittai. We worship Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra. We pray that one day we'll worship them in the spiritual world. It is the same. The means and the goal are the same. This is the difference. So Krishna here is saying, I compare the two paths. Right? What is the comparison? There is no comparison. Right? One is dry, one is full of juice. Right? Just like if you're about to leave this world, you only have one day to live. Right? And someone says to you, what do you want to eat today? Just like in some countries in the world, in America, they still have the death penalty. And in some countries in the world. So what happens on death row, right, is that they come to the prison and they say, today we're going to execute you. Congratulations. Yeah. Today is your final day. What would you like to eat today? Like as if it matters. I'm going to die in 12 hours. What would you like to eat? Like that. So imagine it's your final day. Right? And then you have a choice. Right? So if you have a choice, you eat something dry or something juicy. Right? Imagine if they came to you, right, and they say, today you're going to die, and you have a choice. You can eat mashed potato or rasgulla. Right? What would you do? Hands up if you'd say mashed potato. You can be honest, we don't mind. If you like it, you can say it. It's okay, it's not a... Hands up if you say rasgulla. Right? It's your last meal. All the Mudajis are so detached they don't want to eat anything. Because the managers are thinking, if I eat the rasgulla, I'll put on weight and then I'll be and then I won't fit into my coffin like that. So these considerations are there. Okay. So a diet rasgulla. Okay. So the point is that you have a choice, then what is the choice? Right? The choice is something very dry or something which is full of ras, right? Rasgulla, right? Rasgulla, ras malai. Ras means juice. Without juice, right, there's no flavour, there is no taste. Just like if you get a piece of broccoli, right, you get a nice piece of broccoli and it's juicy, then you will get so much pleasure. If it is all dry and shriveled up, right, there's no pleasure. Right? It is dissatisfying. So this is what this word rasa means. It means juice, it means flavour, it means mellow. So in devotional service, Krishna himself is comparing here, the path of impersonalism is dry. Right? Because it's impersonal. How will you have pleasure if it's impersonal? Right? And the path of bhakti is full of juice, it is full of flavour. Right? It is full of life. Right? It's full of pleasure. Like that. So, Prabhupada, or it's explained in the purport that on the path of impersonalism, on the jnana path, one has to practice alone. Right? Now, if you practice something alone, unless you are very strong and dedicated, it is very difficult. Right? That's why Krishna says in the 12th chapter of the Gita, what does he say about the impersonal path? Yeah, troublesome and difficult. Right? It is troublesome, it is difficult. You're only going to get trouble, you're only going to get difficulty. Because you're doing it by yourself. It's all about your personal ability. How much ability do you have? Right? Just like if you have to practice bhakti for yourself. Right? So say you go and live in a very remote place. Like you go to Alice Springs in the centre of Australia. And I think there's some devotees there, but there's not many. But imagine if there was no devotees there. There was only you. And you had to go there for 1 year. How would you feel? Right? How easy would it be for you to advance? Right? It's very difficult to advance. So on the path of the other paths, you have to practice by yourself. When you practice anything by yourself, it becomes difficult unless you're very strong. Right? But on the path of bhakti, Right? It is, Krishna says, susukam. Susukam means? It is joyful. Right? Why is it joyful? Because we have satsanga, or sadhu sangha, which is mentioned here in the purport. One needs to have association. It is by association that bhakti becomes pleasurable. We need association. So the best association is advanced association. You have to get association of advanced Vaishnavas. Because on the path of bhakti, you can only advance according, unless you're very strong, right? And you can take to nam, you can take to the chanting of the holy name, you can take to reading the book, you can make a lot of advancement if you're very strong. But generally speaking, especially in the beginning, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we can only advance according to the level of association that we get. And practically that is true all the way till the end of our devotional life. We only advance according to the level of association we get. That's why we need to associate with the Guru. That's why we need to associate with advanced Vaishnavas. Because they lift us to a level which we cannot attain on our own. Something which would be very difficult for you to attain, you can attain quite easily by their association. Just like if you're swimming, I remember in the Olympics, I can't remember when it was. Might have been before I became a devotee. So there was two really good swimmers. One was American, one was Australian. It was a big competition. It was like, now we've got Phelps and... what's the other guy's name? He retired. Thorpe, yeah. Thorpe and Phelps. Like the very powerful swimmers. So when they used to swim together, it was a very powerful competition. So I remember a number of years ago, two very powerful swimmers, one from America and one from Australia, came together to swim. But the... American, he was worried about the German who was on the other side, right? So then he swam on that side of the lane, while he swept, because in their competition when they swim, it's all tactics, right? So he swam on the right side of the lane because he's worried about the German. Because if he swam on the left side, then the German will get carried by his wave, because whoever the front swimmer is, he creates a wave and he pulls the other swimmer along. So it's easier if you're just behind the front swimmer, then you're getting pulled along. You don't have to work as hard. So he went onto the right side, but then the Australian came right onto the left side. Right? And for the whole race, he was just swimming in his wave, so it was easy for him. And then at the very end, when the other guy was tired, because he'd been working the whole way, then the Australian really powered, and then he passed him and he got the gold medal. So then everyone's saying, oh, what an idiot. He should have swam in the middle, then he would have won the gold medal, like that. But the point is that he pulled him along. So in devotional service, we get pulled along by the momentum of those who we associate with, right? The more advanced the association we get, then the more we advance in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, devotees, we always look for advanced association. Because according to how advanced the association is, then that is how much we can advance in our Krishna consciousness. So we're always seeking for the opportunity to serve advanced Vaishnavas. This is the secret to success in devotional life. One must have a service attitude towards advanced devotees. Sometimes you see that less advanced devotees, they develop a disrespectful mentality, an abhiman. Abhiman means like a materialistic concept. A materialistic concept towards more advanced devotees. And then what is the result? The result is they commit aparad. And when you commit aparad, then it makes it very difficult to advance as a devotee. Right? Your advancement becomes very limited like that. So therefore, Vedic culture, and because we're practicing a Vedic lifestyle, it is based upon offering respect to senior devotees and associating with them appropriately and keeping in a service attitude. Because if we do not have a service attitude towards the senior devotees, then how can we advance? How can we receive their mercy? Because when the advanced devotee sees that you have a service attitude, then what does he do? Then they give their mercy. They give transcendental knowledge. They will give you instructions because they see your attitude is correct. So therefore our advancement is based upon our service attitude. When we have a service attitude and we associate with the senior devotees correctly, then we get the proper reciprocation. So, the path of bhakti is far superior. Now it's interesting because on Friday, it is a very auspicious day. What is that day? Sri Radhashtami. So we have had Sri Krishna Janmashtami. In order to get the mercy of Sri Krishna, first you must get the mercy of Srimati Radharani. Right? If you analyze what we do every day, what is our main devotional activity? Chanting 16 rounds a day. That's our main devotional activity. Right? So if you chant 16 rounds a day, you chant around 25,000 names of God every day. Hare, Krishna and Rama. Right? So if you chant 16 rounds, you're chanting around 25,000 names of God a day. That's quite a commitment. Now, 50% of those names we're chanting are Hare. That means 12,500 times a day you are chanting the name of Hare. And Hare means the evocative form of the Lord. It is addressing the Lord's energy, which means you are addressing Srimati Radharani. We are saying Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe Radhe. Radhe, there's a different Maha Mantra. Some other sampradayas use a different Maha Mantra, which is a bona fide Maha Mantra. Yeah, but there's a different one to the one that we use. In our sampradaya, we are Madhvas. We come from the Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya. But in some of the other sampradayas, like the Nimbaka sampradaya, they chant a different Maha Mantra to ours, which is authorized. It is not concoction. It is an actual authorized mantra, but it's not the one that we chant like that. But their mantra is Radhe Krishna, Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe Radhe, Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham, Shama Sham, Radhe Radhe. Right? So this is the same mantra. It is exactly the same mantra. Right? But we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. They chant Radhe Krishna, Radhe Sham. Like that. It is the same mantra. So every day we're chanting, right? 12,500 times a day at least, right? The names of Srimati Radharani. Why do we address Radharani? Because Prabhupada explains that you cannot get the mercy of Krishna unless you first get the mercy of Srimati Radharani. Because what is the significance? Krishna is captured by bhakti. Right? One of the symptoms of prema bhakti is Sri Krishna Kashani. Sri Krishna Kashani means it brings Krishna under control. So who has the most prema? Who has the most love for Krishna? Who is the most selfless devotee in existence? Right? The most selfless devotee in existence is Srimati Radharani. So that means she has Krishna under control. Not even partially under control, fully under control. Right? He is 100% controlled by Srimati Radharani. If you want to know what is going on in Krishna's mind, there is only one thing in Krishna's mind. Right? And that is Srimati Radharani. That's all he thinks about continuously. Right? Where is she? Where is she? Right? Where is Radharani now? Right? So he's always thinking like that. So, Prabhupada says that if you come to Radharani and you say, Radharani, please accept my service and pass my service on to Krishna. I'm making a garland. Please accept it and pass it on to Krishna. Then Prabhupada explains that even if we're very unqualified, very foolish, right, which we are, we're very foolish, right, and we're very unqualified, we're disqualified to perform bhakti. But if we get the blessings of Srimati Radharani, then Radharani says to Krishna, Krishna, this person is offering you a garland. This person has more devotion than me. Please accept this garland. Then Prabhupada said, Krishna will surely accept it. So for us, this means that we worship the spiritual master. When we are in Mayapur, we worship the Guru as the expansion of Lord Nityananda. Right? So when we're in the Mayapur, our mood is the Guru is an expansion of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So therefore, all the service we are rendering to our spiritual master is being passed back through disciplic succession to Nityananda Prabhu, who then offers it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mayapur. Now when we're in Vrindavan, we see the Guru as a maidservant of Srimati Radharani, which means that any service we offer to our guru is then passed back in disciplic succession to Srimati Radharani and then offered to Krishna. This is the process of how to please Krishna and how to approach Krishna. So, we need the mercy of Srimati Radharani. And it is easy to get the mercy of Srimati Radharani because Krishna has 64 qualities, and one of the qualities is there's 64. But which one does Radharani represent? Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Devotion. Compassion. Right? Out of the 64 qualities, the quality of compassion, Prabhupada explains, is personified by Srimati Radharani. Right? She is soft, she is full of compassion. So if we approach her, surely Krishna will accept us. But if we do not approach her, if we try to go directly to Krishna, we may never be accepted, because we'll never get qualified enough practically to directly approach Krishna. Krishna says to Arjuna in the Adi Purana, "One who says he is my devotee, he is not my devotee. But one who says he is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee." Right? So that means we have to be a devotee of Srimati Radharani and her representatives. Just like in Vrindavan, just near Radha Kund, there was one jackal. And that jackal is like a dog, a jackal. So that jackal, he was caught on fire, because the children in the village, they used to harass the jackal, and they used to come and they used to throw stones at the jackal and tease the jackal and so forth. So one time the jackal ran down into a hole, and then the children, they set fire to the entrance of the hole like that. And this is just near Radha Kund in this world. If you go to India and you get off the plane at Delhi and you drive to Vrindavan and then you go to Radha Kund, then there's one place there, and there's one kund just outside of Radha Kund. And at that place, they just said that the jackal was living, and the children, they set fire to the entranceway to the hole where the jackal was living. And then Srimati Radharani was with Lalita and Vishaka and Tungabhija and Chitra and Champakalata and Sudevi and Rangadevi and Indulekha, all the Ashtasakis. And then she said, "I can hear someone crying," because the jackal was crying because he's about to be burnt. So she said to Lalita, "Quick, someone is crying. Someone here at Radhakund is crying." So then immediately they went, and then they told the children, go away," like that. And then they cleared away the fire and they pulled the jackal out. So this is Radharani's compassion. We may be burning in the ocean of material existence. We may be burning and suffering in this material world. But Srimati Radharani, she will be very compassionate to us. And if we call out to her sincerely, especially on Radhashtami, if we call out sincerely, then she will give us special mercy. Because we need the mercy of Radharani more than any personality. She is the topmost devotee in existence. She fully has Krishna under control. Radharani does two different services. Out of all the services she does to Krishna, two of them are considered to be supreme. What are the two services which give Krishna the most pleasure?
Cooking,
cooking and dancing. When she dances, she captivates Krishna. There's descriptions of the way Radharani dances. It is the most she is the Krishna is known as Nataraj. He's the king of dance. And she is the queen of dance. She captivates even Krishna when she dances. The most amazing dance. And her other most excellent service is her cooking. Because she had a benediction from Durvasa Muni. Because Durvasa Muni came to Brishabhanu Maharaj's, her father's and mother Kirtida in Brishabhanu Maharaj's palace at Varshana, I think, one time. So Devasa Muni came there and Radharani cooked for Devasa Muni. When he tasted her cooking, he said, "This cooking is so excellent." He said, "I'll give you the benediction that whoever you cook for, they will live a very long life and they will get great vitality." So she had that benediction. So then Mother Yashoda, she found out that Radharani had this benediction, that whoever she cooks for will live for a very long time. So every day she organized with Jatila, Radharani's so-called mother-in-law, right, that Radharani would come every day and cook for Krishna at Nandagram. So she goes from Javad, or from Varshana, every day. She lives 6 months of the year in Varshana, 6 months in Javad. So 6 months of the year, she comes from either Javad or from Varshana, and she goes to Nandagram and she cooks for Krishna at that place. So on the way, when she's going to cook for Krishna, she goes past Tirukadamba. Tirukadamba is the place, one of the places, where Krishna milks the cows. So when Krishna sees Radharani coming, he becomes very pleased. So then he said, but he thinks, I won't let her know that I'm noticing that she is coming. So then he gets down with his milk bucket, and he has a beautiful golden milk bucket with jewels in it, and he gets underneath and he holds the milk bucket between his knees, and he gets down underneath a bull and he begins to milk like this. There's only one problem. Bulls don't have any udders. So he's just there and he's milking away like that. He doesn't realize that he's actually not drawing any milk because he's under a bull. And Radharani walks past and she flicks him. As she walks past, she flicks him with her, like her skirt, just flicks him in the face. And then Krishna, he looks up and then she says, oh, it's very good today. You're milking a bull. Very intelligent. So they're always having these pastimes. Right? Other times she walks past and he's actually milking a cow, and as she walks past she flicks him in the face, and then he turns around and he gets the udder from the cow and he squirts her in the face with the milk. So they're always competing with each other, these people. Because of all the gopis, there are two sets of gopis. One is the right wing, one is the left wing. You see, Radharani always stands on Krishna's left, right? She's always on his left because she's the leader of the left wing gopis. And Chandravali, who is like Radharani's sister, although they are actually sisters, but they're said to be from different families, then Chandravali is in charge of the right wing gopis. Now the right wing gopis are submissive to Krishna. Their mentality is, I belong to Krishna, right? But the left wing gopis, they are Bama. Bama means they are unsubmissive, right? So they think Krishna belongs to me, right? Different mentality, right? The Chandravali and her gopis are very submissive. They think Krishna, we belong to him. We will serve him submissively. They're always submissive to Krishna. But Radharani and her gopis, especially Lalita, right? They are very Bama, which means they are very unsubmissive to Krishna. They always think Krishna is mine. He will do what I say. Whatever I want, Krishna will do that. Like that. So that is the mood. So they're always having this rasa. Because Krishna by nature, he is also like that. Right? He likes to dominate also. So there's always competition going on between them. They're always getting each other back during the day. So then Radharani, she goes up the hill. She goes to Nandagram. She begins to cook for Krishna. So she cooks in a very short amount of time. She cooks hundreds of preparations for Krishna. And then the gopis begin to serve it out to Krishna. So Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, Krishna sits down with Nanda Maharaj sits down, and then Krishna sits on one side and Balaram sits on the other side. So then Mother Rohini and Yashoda, they begin to serve out, and then Nanda Maharaj, he takes the prasad, he puts some in Balaram's mouth, he takes it, puts some in Krishna's mouth, and then everyone begins to eat. So all the cowherd boys are sitting there and they're all taking prasad, and all the Mother Yashoda and Rohini. So in the meantime, Radharani is in the kitchen and she's behind the trellis. Just like you see on the door, we have like trellis. You have like holes in the, or you see on the gate like that. So you'll see when you go to Varshana, you'll see like there is trellis work. So there's like nice stone, and then the stone has like little holes in it. You know what I'm talking about? Like the trellis like that. So she's in the kitchen, she's looking through the trellis and she's seeing, how is Krishna liking everything I've cooked? So Krishna is enjoying it. He's eating so much. And all the other cowherd boys are eating so much. And everyone's enjoying. And then Krishna picks up one laddu, which he likes very much. It's like one of his favorite laddus. And he picks it up and he looks at it like that. And then he goes to bite it, and when he bites it, he goes like this, completely sour. And Radharani, she's looking at Krishna through the trellis work, and she sees Krishna, and she thinks, oh my God, what have I done? You know, I've cooked something which is which is not pleasing to Krishna, and she thinks it's and she's beside herself in anxiety. And Krishna, he says, well, then he puts it on Sri Dharma's plate. Sri Dharma is the younger brother of Srimati Radharani. And then Sri Dharma, he picks it up, he looks at it, and then he eats it, and he goes, because it is so nice. And then Krishna, he looks out of the corner of his eye, looks at Radharani, and he says, I got you. Right? He looks at Radharani, and then Radharani looks back at him and says, I'll get you back later. Like that. So it's always going on. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, all day. That's all that happens in the spiritual world. Right? So ISKCON is a little bit like that also. It's always some rustling going on, some kneeling going on, like that. Because in the spiritual world, it's not anything in the spiritual world is, you know, shanti, shanti, shanti. It's not all just peaceful. In the spiritual world, it's always full of rasa. There's always excitement. And then there's one place at Govardhan Hill, there's one lake called Manasi Ganga. And if you go to Braj, right, the biggest lake in Braj is Manasi Ganga. It's a huge lake. It's actually the Ganga, which has out of Krishna's mind. Manasi means out of the mind of Krishna, this lake has appeared in Vrindavan, which is actually the Ganga. So sometimes the gopis go there and they want to take their milk products across the Manasi Ganga, the huge lake. So they go there and there's one boat there. And there's one boatman in the boat and he's asleep. And he has a big cloak on like that and he's sleeping there. And there's no other boats. And they look down and they say, oh, this boat's not very good. It's like a very old boat like that. And the guy's there, he's sleeping. And they say, hey, boatwala, wake up. wake up, like that. So then the boat where he's kind of wakes up, looks at them and they say, take us across. Like that. And he says, then how much will you pay me? And they said, well, we'll give you some of our milk products that we're carrying across. We'll give you some yogurt and some butter and like that. We'll give you some. He says, okay, then you get in. Right. So they all hop in. Radharani and several of her sakis, they hop in. And then the boatman begins to push the pole across the... And he's pushing across. And then he gets halfway across the lake. And then he says, I'm too tired. I'm hungry. I haven't eaten enough today, so I need to have something to eat, like that. And they say, if you don't keep rowing, we're going to throw you overboard, right? So you just start rowing like that. So then they say, okay. So he starts rowing again. So he starts rowing. Then he gets halfway across again, not halfway, but a little bit further. And then he says, oh no, he said, there's a big storm coming. And then they all look up in the sky. And then suddenly in the sky, all dark clouds begin to come. Right, and then a big wind comes, and then on the Manasi Ganga, big waves begin to move, and the boat begins to move, and the boatman stands up, right, and he stands up on the boat, and then he's with his feet, he's moving the boat from side to side like that, and he's going, oh no, the boat is moving, there's a big storm, and all the gopis begin to get very scared. So then water starts coming in, because it's an old boat, so water starts coming in like one of the holes like that, and the water comes in. And the gopis begin to scream, and he says, I think we're all going to sink. Right? So then Radharani and all the gopis, they say, what do we do? Like that. He says, throw all your milk products overboard. So they get all their milk products, and they throw everything overboard like that. Right? And then they say to him, and the water's still coming in. He's moving the boat around, and the water's still coming in. And then he says, no, it's still coming in. They say, what do we do? He said, throw all your jewelry overboard. So all their jewelry, their gold, because they've got gold on and all stuff. They throw their gold, their bangles and their jewelry, and they're throwing everything overboard like that. So then he's still rocking the boat and the water's still coming in. And they said, what do we do? We're going to drown. Like that. He said, throw your saris overboard. So then they look at him and they think, who's this guy? Like that. So then... Then Radharani, she's so scared, she grabs the boatman. She says, boatman, save us. Like that. And then when she grabs the boatman, and she feels under the cloak, she feels, wait a minute. And she feels there's something there, like a long stick. And then she puts her hand in and she pulls it out and there's a flute. And then she looks at the boatman and she says, wait a minute, I think I know you. And then Lalita and the other gopis, they say, Radharani, they say, what are you doing? Why are you touching anyone but Krishna? Why are you touching this boatman? And she turns around, she shows him the flute and says, don't you know who this guy is? Like that. And then he pulls the cloak off, right? And then he shows he's actually him, right? And then he gets a cork and he puts it into the hole in the boat so the water stops coming in, like that. And then all the clouds disappear, and then he just begins to push them around the Manasiganga, and they have beautiful pastimes as they go around the Manasiganga. So this is what the spiritual world is like. It is full of rasa. So on Friday we have the opportunity to pray to Radharani that we can please get qualification to maybe one day enter into these pastimes and become a servant in these pastimes. So the choice is ours. You can stay here in Albert Park, or you can go to Manasiganga or Varshana or Nandagram. The choice is ours. What is the desire? Krishna says, Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavam. Whatever you remember at the time of death, that you will attain without fail. So if you are attached to Albert Park, you will take birth in Albert Park. Yeah. Maybe it's one of the pigeons. They come every day to eat the prasad. Or in your heart, right, at the time of death, if you are thinking of Varshana or Nandagram, or Radharani or Krishna or your guru or Prabhupada or Manasiganga, then you may go to one of those places. It's all up to your desire. Krishna says, Ye yata mam prabhajanti tams tataiva bhajamyaham. As you surrender to me, I will reward you accordingly. Okay. So we'll stop here unless there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Would you like to tell us something more? Ekadam? Rupa Goswami also mentioned.
Rupa Goswami wrote some of his books there. There's a Kadamba tree there. Tear means tears. So Rupa Goswami would lean against the tree while he was writing. And when he was writing about the meeting of Radha and Krishna in some of his books, then the Kadamba tree, it would sprout new leaves and it would sprout buds, flower buds, Kadamba, for the Kadamba flowers to grow. So in ecstasy, just like when one is in ecstasy, one's hair stand on end. So when the Kadamba tree felt that Rupa Goswami was writing about Radha and Krishna meeting together, then the leaves and the buds on the tree would stand up on end. And then when Rupa Goswami would write about the separation of Radha and Krishna, when they are separated, all the leaves on the Kadamba tree would fall off. Just like when we cry, then our tears come. All the leaves would fall off the Kadamba tree like that. So that in relation to Rupa Goswami, this is where he wrote some of his books like that. There's also one pastime where he was there with Sanatan Goswami, who is his older brother and his guru. And he was thinking in his mind, because they were sitting there for many hours talking about Krishna Katha. And then after some time, Rupa Goswami, he thought in his mind, he thought, Sanatan has been sitting here for a long time, he must be hungry. I'd like to cook something for him. And then one little girl, she came. Suddenly, she just came. And the little girl said, I have some milk and some rice and some sugar. So this is for you, and some cardamom and some things like that. So this is for you. You can cook some kheer, like that. And then she's a very beautiful little girl. And then she smiled and she left. And then Rupa Goswami, he took those ingredients and he cooked some kheer, some sweet rice. And then he offered it to Lord Krishna, and then he offered it to Sanatan Goswami. And then Sanatan Goswami, he ate that kheer, and then he said, where did this come from? And Rupa Goswami said, I was thinking in my mind that you must be hungry, so I was thinking, and then suddenly a little girl came and she gave some milk and some sugar. And he says, that girl is Radharani. He said, don't ever accept service from Radharani. He said, we are meant to serve Radharani. We're not meant to accept service from Radharani. So don't think like that. Otherwise she will come and serve us. That. So these are some of the pastimes that happen have taken up. There's other pastimes as well, but
last time I saw all of you doing chanting with Hariyan Prabhu. So many people
taken up. Yeah. So any other questions or comments?
Yeah.
Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimati Radharani ki, Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan ki, Sri Radhastami Brata ki, Jai Nitai Gopremon.